you tell me about the first time you met Saul Bellow?
Yes, it was in 1990 at a party that Viking had thrown for the Bella Rosa Connection, one of his books. And I met him very, very briefly then. The party was absolutely mobbed. But several years later, I actually drove up there with a dear friend of mine who was his copy editor. It was absolutely wonderful. It was in Vermont. The trees were in bloom. The colors were gorgeous. And there was Saul, a writer whom I worshipped my entire life.
Very cool. And so it was through his previous copy editor that you came to be his editor?
Yes, that's right.
What was Saul Bellow like to work with in person?
Well, if you're a lover of words, he was absolutely astonishing because his routine was amazing. At 9:30 in the morning, you went in, he was sitting there with his cup of coffee, we would begin work, and he knew instinctively when something wasn't working. He would home in on it, on a passage that wasn't working, and then refine it and polish it and revise it until it was absolutely perfect. And the transformations that occurred with each revision of that passage were absolutely amazing. When you heard the final product, it was like a jewel coming out of a box.
Wow. Yeah, that sounds incredible. Can you talk me through some more of the review process you typically go through together?
He would sit there thinking for a while about something that wasn't working. And you knew, sitting across from him and from the accelerated breathing, the deeply furrowed brow, that he was really considering this. He was considering his options. And he'd try them out loud. First, he'd read one version, then another. And when he had it, he knew. My job was to listen carefully, to watch out for repetitions, to say, perhaps we need to know what sort of dress she's wearing, or just for the purposes of discussion, or what are they drinking? Is it coffee, tea, or what? You know, just things like that sort of needed to be added in. And sometimes they were relevant and sometimes not. When we worked, he would read through the manuscript or the proofs, but sometimes the closest work was done at proof stage. Paragraph by paragraph, the work was combed by his searching sensibility for what seemed weak in comparison to the rest, for what needed refining. He'd say, this isn't working, is it? This isn't good, you know. He was a perfectionist. And of course, to most of us, mere mortals, what he was saying wasn't good was good, but to him it wasn't. So he knew what he wanted, and he worked relentlessly towards that. These were all momentous moments, for the transformations, as I say, were magical. Everything was sharper, clearer, more focused.
What were some of your most memorable experiences from your time with him?
You know, they all were, because the work was the work. And when you sat down and faced him across the table, the rhythm of it was such. It was the same, literally, with every book. This was the process of going through each page, each paragraph, until he got it right. He would read aloud, page by page. And when he came across something that wasn't working, he would say, that's no good, you know. And then it went through this revision.
So he said that he decided to become a writer when he was 8 years old and spent months recovering from a respiratory infection with just Uncle Tom's Cabin for company. Did you see that in your time with him or in his work?
Yes, he was in the hospital for 6 months and at death's door, but he recovered. And I think it had an effect on him for the rest of his life. And I think anyone who's had such a reprieve in life is able to look back and treasure life for what it is. Zachary Leder's biography actually talks about this quite a bit. And yes, it was a milestone in Bellow's life. And he was very young. He was 8 when this happened. There can be no doubt that he was affected by that deeply.
We are an Illinois station, so I'd like to spend a little bit of time on his very strong connection to Chicago. He emigrated to Chicago as a child, stayed there for most of his life.
Mm-hmm.
Did he ever talk with you about Chicago? Or?
Well, Chicago is in his fiction. It's everywhere. Read Herzog. Read, it's everywhere. It's in Humboldt's Gift. It's, Chicago was the backdrop for so much of his fiction. I think, you know, he knew it intimately. He knew its streets. He knew its ethos. He knew its sounds, its smells. And they're all there. So I think Chicago was quite central to his work.
Mm-hmm. And his work is considered, he's one of the best, the great American writers. And yet his works have kind of decreased in prominence in recent years. Do you have any idea why that is?
Well, there are still lots of people reading Bellow. Sales of books do not equal readership, because people who read Bellow find Bellow through so many different routes, the library or used copies or this or that. So has he declined in prominence? Well, in some ways, yes, because it's not the heyday of the 50s and the 60s when literary writers were out there with blockbusters. But I wouldn't say he's declined in prominence. I think that generally people are reading less these days, and that's the problem.
Mm-hmm. What do you see as some of his greatest contributions to American fiction?
Well, he really had a handle on common life.
Mm-hmm.
He himself said this once. He said that, "I find that the things that agitate, confuse, and sometimes indeed frighten me about our time agitate, confuse, and frighten a great many others. As a novelist, it is a good part of my job to attempt to formulate as dramatically and as precisely as I can the pain and anguish that we all feel. Now, more than ever, it seems to me it becomes the writer's job to remind people of their common stock of emotion, of their common humanity, of the fact, if you will, that they have souls." And it's that common humanity, I think. He accessed it because he'd lived so close to the bone. He accessed it in a way that, for readers who demand an intellectual route to gleaning the truth of life, his route is incredibly rich and rewarding, but it also is common in that it goes to the pain, the anguish, the uncertainties, the disappointments, the desires, the delusions we all have about life. And I think that's what makes it so distinctive. Also, it was the way he saw people. He saw a face and it told him everything about that person. It was as if it was, if you look at his physical descriptions, they're very rich. And you get the crook of a leg, the shape of a mouth, the look in the eye, the complexion. These are all indicative of what the person is like, what the person is about, what's the soul within the person.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite?
Well, I have lots of favorites. I mean, Herzog, I read Herzog when I was a child, so it has a special meaning for me for many reasons. I think you get to a child's sensibility, a child's consciousness in that book. You get to it in a way that is not really that accessible in fiction elsewhere. But I love Ravelstein, partly because I worked with him so closely on it. And I really love them all. The Actual is such a marvelous, marvelous story.
So for someone who's been listening and is now inspired to pick up one of his works, which one do you recommend they start with?
Well, I would say Seize the Day, because it goes to the heart of a relationship that we all have, a child with a parent. And I think it's beautifully done. Something to Remember Me By is a late novella, absolutely exquisite. It has a sublime ending. And then Collected Stories, which were written over a lifetime of Bellow's writing. And so it, in one volume, you are introduced to different times in this very long writing career. And my personal favorite, of course, Herzog. How can you not absolutely adore it? So it's a very moving book, and funny too. Humor is such a large component of Bellow's work.
It really is. Throughout his life, he earned all of the major awards. How did he...
Pretty much everything.
Yeah. How did he respond to all of that recognition?
From the few conversations I had with him about that, he took it in his stride. It was all, you know, a wonderful thing. But he didn't want it to intrude on his writing. He was very astute about that. He separated the prize-winning factor from the writing factor. And he kept it pure. So that, I think, is a very difficult thing to manage because it's natural to be deeply affected by all these awards that you've been winning, etc. But I think with him, he was able to separate the two things.
That's very impressive.
Yeah.
Are there any other insights or memories that you'd like to share?
I think what I'd like to say is that he has left us an incredible gift with his words. If you want to know Bello, read his books. These words reach out and speak to us in this voice that is understood at the deepest level of who we are. This is a gift, and for those who are prepared to receive it, it is an astonishing gift. And the way we can honor this gift that he's given us is to read him over and over again, because one reading is never enough. There are new truths, new jewels to be found every time you read him. It's, I've read Herzog at least 5 times, and I still come across things that I think, my God, I never saw that before.